Hello and welcome to another episode of Shadow Talk, your weekly cybersecurity news and threat research podcast brought to you by the ReliaQuest threat research team. My name is Chris and I'll be your host this week, and I'm in London for the first time in quite a while, it seems, and I'm delighted to be joined by two of my illustrious colleagues. So first up, we have one of ReliaQuest CISOs, Rick Holland. Welcome, Rick. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be in person with you.
Yeah, always. And we have Danny on the line as well. How's things, Danny?
Hello, mate. Yeah, good. Excited to hear about your kebabs from last night.
It was nice. Yeah.
Deconstructed kebab.
Deconstructed. I almost sent it back. Like, where's the rest of it, mate? Yeah, it was good. So if this is an ongoing joke between me and Danny for about a year now, so we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Who else needs to know this? Anyway, we'll move on and discuss several items that we have on for today. So the first thing is just quickly discussing our experiences going to InfoSec this week. So I attended this afternoon on Wednesday, the 21st of June. Had a few really insightful and useful talks that I attended. But first up with you, Rick, you know, have you any thoughts? How has your experience this week been?
I was there on Tuesday, there today on Wednesday. My internet or my cell service didn't work, mobile service didn't work today. So there was markedly more people in the expo floor today than there was yesterday. Yesterday I had a presentation on security operations for multi-cloud, multi-SIM environments. It was very well attended. I actually had a fair amount of people that were looking at Microsoft Azure Sentinel and the E5 license. And so I had some really good conversations around that. Of course, saw lots of people in the community that I know. People were saying that, you know, last year was what the first year kind of post-pandemic where people are coming back, but this year seemed bigger than last year. One thing that struck me just comparing InfoSec to Black Hat and RSA conference, the floors were spread out more. And so I was far less claustrophobic at some of the other events. And then our ReliaQuest booth was nice. We have we had a coffee machine there and you could get your espressos and flat whites and whatnot. So that was nice to get caffeinated in the morning. I enjoyed it. It was good being over on the side of the pond for it. Ironically, or funnily enough, it's my first time to ever attend InfoSec.
Oh, really?
After coming to the UK for what, probably 10, 11 years now, never actually attended.
Interesting. It was actually my first InfoSec as well, bizarrely. I absolutely aimed to be there the last couple of years, and then it was just one of those, you come in, I aim to be there on this particular day, and then something happens. Just, yeah, priorities for work. So, yeah, it's my first time attending too, actually.
I feel like a veteran now, having been once last year. I agree, it was rammed. Like, we went to go try and see one talk about Rise of Bots and things like that, and couldn't get in because it was so full. But we did end up seeing, it's quite interesting, a talk on what's the point of security certifications? Are they still useful? And there was an interesting moment where the CISO of a high-profile British media company, or remain nameless, who was giving the talk, was asked by, who I'm sure was a journalist, the CISO had just said, "Oh, we're not sure about the value of certs in specific areas, particularly ISO certs." And the journalist said, "Oh, well, that's interesting that you say that, given that you're being hacked at the moment." And the host said, "Oh, that's not an appropriate question for this talk." The whole room was sort of like, oh
wow, call them out,
yeah,
right there and then. Shocking.
I don't know. Well, it doesn't feel quite right.
No,
don't put people on the spot.
No, they were shut down pretty quickly.
Good, glad to hear that. The one I attended this morning was interesting. I went to a presentation on myths about ransomware because we love talking about that, apparently. Mm-hmm. And yeah, on that note, we'll be touching on that shortly, several times. So one of the things that kind of struck out for me was he mentioned the role of public and private sector coming together to work on decryptors, and that's how ransomware can be fought like best. So, you know, essentially giving companies the tools to stop these attacks and breaking the trust between the operators and the affiliates. So they used the example of GanCrab, of all these affiliates conducting attacks and then not actually resulting in a ransom payment. And that ruins the relation between those operators and the affiliates conducting the attacks. And that's kind of how that ransomware group became defunct, which I thought was an interesting kind of way of looking at it. I'm not sure about the data exfiltration angle.
Well, it doesn't help with double extortion.
No,
or but how double extortion has become the single extortion now because they don't even do the encryption.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? Okay, on that note, let's move on to Klopp. And yeah, I made the joke last week that this is becoming the opening segment on a weekly basis. And unfortunately, we're going to have to do it for 4 weeks in a row now.
It's a bad joke. It's a bad joke.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to be 5 weeks, but there we go. And yeah, if you've not seen the fallout of Klopp's exploitation of the zero-day bug affecting file transfer provider MoveIt, then I'm not sure where you've been hiding. Probably somewhere nice. If you haven't heard of this, but yeah, essentially it's been a particularly impactful attack with a huge scale. I think we're at over 50 victims now that's been named to Klopp's data leak site as we record this on Wednesday, the 21st of June, 2023. So first question to you, Danny, is, you know, what's the latest from the kind of shenanigans? You know, what's your thoughts on the initial impact and initial thoughts on this attack?
Yeah, so 52 victims still trickling in this morning. A few more come out.
Again, it's Wednesday afternoon in the UK, just from a timestamp perspective. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if after the recording of this pod, there are more. It's been death by typing up ransomware posts at the moment. But yeah, most victims are in the US. There's also Western and Northern Europe, Australia, Brazil, Hong Kong represented. In terms of industries, it's like financial services and pharmaceutical biotechnology are pretty well represented. Also education and technology. But yeah, likely more to come just given the large number of originally exposed devices or devices exposed to the MoveIt vulnerability. So yeah, don't want to hold my breath.
Yeah, plenty more to follow, unfortunately. Rick, could you provide comments on the kind of residual fallout from some of these companies being named? Without naming names, there's obviously a lot of well-known service providers with, you know, a big scale of kind of partners and customer base. You know, what's your kind of thoughts on like the residual fallout from this?
One thing that still stands out for me is the blast radius and the implications for third-party risk management. You know, this was a zero-day attack. The victims, you know, were unaware of it. Hopefully they had the right logging, so you have to fall back to detection and response because that's your only option there. But you really, I mean, it highlights the challenges with zero days. It is a big, big challenge. So hopefully getting things turned around as quickly as possible, taking servers offline is a really, really key component to it. It's just a really unfortunate situation, and it highlights when you're going up against a threat actor like Klopp, as we've talked about on the pod before, that has both capabilities and intent. A lot of times there's the intent with very immature, less capable. It's really a bad mix of the two with Klopp. And there's going to be a long tail on this, you know, with all the third-party stuff going on. We still don't know, you know, we haven't seen a forensic, at least to my knowledge, I haven't seen a forensic public deep dive like you've seen, you know, with like Mandiant did with SolarWinds, you know, Okta eventually gave more details on their breach. LastPass eventually gave more details on their breach. So I think we're missing a whole component of the story there that I'm quite keen to do. And one of the things that we were talking about with some of the at InfoSec again is just how do you respond, right? We shouldn't kind of assume breach. Everyone's going to get popped. To everybody that's listening, you've got to have tabletop exercises. You've got to know how you're going to respond to these things. We talked on the webinar that we did week before last, I've lost track of time and Klopp time here. Week before last, about some of the steps you can do there. And maybe we can put the webinar in the show notes.
It's a good idea.
As well there. The one thing that stands out to me, especially after looking at some of the, again, won't name the victims, but looking at some of the data that has been leaked, some of what I looked at looked like, I don't want to say innocuous payroll data, but the main thing I talked about on the webinar was exposure. And looking at just a small sample size, so not representative of everything, I didn't see necessarily PII, you know, personally identifiable information. You know, this could be why, you know, people say, why wouldn't you pay? Well, it's not regulated. It's less sensitive. And then the converse is if it was regulated or perhaps you were going to get fines, then maybe you start having a consideration around it. But the key thing is have these conversations in advance.
Yeah, assume breach. That was one of the things that we, we identified on the piece of work we did on this when it first kind of went live, right? I think you took the wind out of my sails on the last question I was going to ask there. But you know, what realistically, you know, should be companies be doing, not just in the short term, but like longer term as well? So I know you mentioned about 0 days and just how difficult it is to anticipate. You know, is this a case of kind of compensating controls, defense in depth, making sure that you're kind of as strong as you can be, you know, in despite of these 0 days potentially being exploited?
I think the first thing is patching your external infrastructure. If you think about detection funnel, you don't, an incident response, you don't want your team chasing known patched systems, right? That's just creating more noise. Now, fortunately, ReliaQuest helps customers eliminate noise from a security monitoring perspective, but don't spin your teams up chasing low-hanging fruit. Free the resources up because you're doing the right blocking, tackling, patching, so that your detection, your limited detection resources via in-house or, you know, co-managed or fully managed, can save those resources and then ability for the, you know, the cream of the crop, the apex predators. So I think that's one component. Other things that I would do 100%, I would, if you don't have an incident response retainer, so that when something happens that you can bring in the IR firms to do that, I would get an incident response retainer up. I would also be aware of what your cyber insurance policy is. I hope that a lot of the security leaders have been involved in the policies, but knowing what you can do there, again, tabletop exercise, which we talk about quite a bit when it comes to ransomware, and then the PR plan, again, because it's how you communicate out is how you'll ultimately be judged, especially when, you know, it's a 0 day type of thing.
One of the things on the risk calculation presentation I looked at today was just, he was really trying to make the point of understand what your vendors are, because everybody uses them. It's just an inevitability. You know, we're all in an interconnected world now. You're not a North Korean company. You have to have some level of exposure to third parties. So understanding which of your key vendors are out there and kind of working with them in the aftermath of these sorts of incidents, I think is a really important one as well, because there's probably going to be quite a few of them. You'll have some exposure in some way, I would assume.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you weren't scared enough of this, we're already starting to see the beginnings of POCs and custom exploits advertised on cybercriminal forums. So yesterday, a really credible vendor who's got like loads of confirmed sales on a prominent Russian language cybercriminal forum.
Vendor, you mean criminal vendor? Here,
yes.
Not
Thanks
for clarifying that.
Yeah, it was a movie themselves, but advertised a custom exploit with like a nice GUI ability to pass sessions to and from Cobalt Strike. So threat actors are almost certainly still trying to exploit this, not just Clop. Cybercriminals don't build these exploits and try and sell them if they don't think anyone's going to buy them.
It's probably going to get quite a bit of traction considering how successful Clop have been with this, but obviously maybe the horse has bolted to a certain extent.
It's like a feeding frenzy. We talked about this, I think, on the webinar too. You know, once a nation state, or, you know, now they have an opportunity to weaponize something and there's a 0 day. So China's spinning up on this. Similarly with the Hafnium exploits for Microsoft Exchange from 2 years ago, 18 months ago, you know, other actors were jumping on that. So, you know, the first one's going to get in, others are going to follow. That's why I've been suggesting, if you have an option, and I just talked to a customer on Friday that did not have an option, but I take the MOVEit server down, because we've now seen 3 rounds of vulnerabilities in the MOVEit software. To me, it is just too high risk at this point. I would wait till a forensic investigation is out and there's more details there. But of course, it's easy to say that, but there are sometimes business needs why you have to keep some of this stuff up.
Yeah.
There's also a possibility of other similar file transfer software being targeted by the likes of Clop as well, because this is not the first time they've done this. What was it? When was Excellion? Was it FTA? That was like a couple of years ago, right? Was it 2021? And then obviously Go Anywhere, that was earlier this year. So this is kind of their MO, it seems. So, you know, similar software might be targeted in a way in the future.
And they're moving faster, right? In the Go Anywhere, I think you had about a month from acknowledgement to started disclosing victims. Now we had about a week from acknowledgement to disclosing victims. So their sales cycle, if you will, has decreased. Well, I guess in the sales term, you see your sales cycle's increased. You're moving faster through your customers. And of course they do advertise themselves as a pen testing service.
Yeah, say we audit networks.
In a roundabout way, I guess, sort of.
I would not provide that as evidence to my, we were talking about certifications. I would not provide that as evidence to my auditors.
I wonder what certifications these guys at Klopp have got. They must have a few, right?
Ah, they learned on the streets, I reckon.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, let's move on to our second favorite recent threat group. Of course, that is Killnet, a pro-Russian hacktivist collective, who have claimed recently to be working in conjunction with a notorious Reval ransomware gang. The goal is apparently to mount an attack on the Western financial system. So in a video posted on a Russian Telegram channel on June 16th, Killnet made several threats against the SWIFT banking system, which of course famously was targeted by Lazarus in 2018, Lazarus being a North Korean threat group. And also the Wise International wire transfer system and several other kind of payment services across Europe and the US. So Danny, have Killnet and their association to, in this case at least, to Reval and also Anonymous Sudan and Anonymous Russia, have they kind of lived up to their threat so far? What's happened?
So they've started, but yeah, it's definitely... maybe underwhelming is the wrong word to use in this context, but certainly not like what they've claimed they're going to do. So, because they claim to they were going to destroy the Western banking system. And
quite a lofty goal.
London doesn't look like Mad Max yet, so
should have perhaps aimed a little bit lower.
Yeah,
under promise and over deliver.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it. Yeah.
So they have hit the European Investment Bank. Their website experienced a complete outage. But as far as we know, it's just DDoS, really. Killnet have said, oh, we're going to take down SEPA, IBAN, Wire, SWIFT, Wise, all of that. We're not really seeing any evidence of that. So, again, it's still fairly early days. There could be more to come, but so far, underwhelming.
Yeah, I did see the attack against the European Investment Bank, was it? EIB?
Yeah.
A few websites kind of taken down, just look very much like the classic MO DDoS.
Yeah.
I mean, what might the motivation for this activity be? I know Killnet and the role as kind of a pro-Russian hacktivist outfit, and they've been quite active since February of 2022,
yeah.
You know, for the obvious reasons. You know, why are they conducting this campaign now? What's the reason behind the timing?
I think mainly to cause confusion and panic during the start of Ukraine's counteroffensive. I think Ukraine are being quite coy about whether it's fully started, but certainly some shaping operations are underway. And I think also in the context of more and more frequently large funds being granted or pledged to Ukraine for military, humanitarian support for recovery efforts once the war is over. So the UK recently pledged to donate $3 billion over the next 3 years. The US announced yesterday, or it might have been this morning, another $1.3 billion in fresh economic aid. So perhaps they're just trying to increase uncertainty on the abilities, on the banking sector's ability to send and receive funds. But I kind of doubt it. I think probably Killnet, which is likely kind of use language of uncertainty there, but at least influenced by the Russian state's interests, is just doing what they can. DDoS, it's very annoying when it happens, but it's not, doesn't maybe have the same impact and sophistication as a ransomware attack. And I think they're just doing what they can, kind of little overheads to conduct a DDoS attack in comparison to other types of attacks. So just trying to create confusion and make things difficult for other people.
Doing what they can, I suppose, while you said the spring offensive is ongoing.
Yeah.
You mentioned Reval there, and of course they also referenced Anonymous Sudan and Anonymous Russia. What do we think about the association with like Reval in particular? I thought was interesting. Yeah. I've kind of got an opinion, but just like to hear what you think.
Yeah. So I'm sure many people are following this are aware that there's no real evidence that Anonymous Sudan are from Sudan. I think there's just a kind of plausible deniability thing there. But in terms of Reval, again, you mentioned at the start that it was just the evidence presented was on a video posted to Telegram. Basically, there's a guy in a balaclava, and the Reval flashes on the page. There's no other evidence to suggest that Reval are involved other than that. I think they're using that just because Reval's a big name for the media. They're just trying to generate hype. Maybe there's the kind of psyops element to it, just so panic and confusion, and that's more important than the actual impact of the attack themselves.
Yep.
But I think some part of it doesn't quite make sense to me, because they're announcing what their targets are going to be before they target them, which is, I think, quite rare in terms of, well, compared to most cyber attacks. I just made the comparison, like, if you want to rob a bank, the worst thing you can do is say, we're going to rob this bank.
Maybe not for hacktivists. So I think hacktivists, generally speaking, they're quite obvious about what they're going to do, right?
Mm, yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, you're absolutely right with other motivated attackers. Yeah, I thought the Reval thing was mostly just they were trying to add an air of threat to what they were saying in a really kind of obviously false way.
Yeah.
Obfuscate what they might be doing, because they said, you know, we're going to bring down the Western financial system or whatever it was. Not really going to be able to do that with a DDoS attack, are you? You might be able to cause some particularly significant damage with a ransomware attack, but I think they're just trying to add an air of credibility to what their bold claims were.
Maybe they were Reval known to use 0 days? Maybe they were just going to, oh, well, Reval are involved and they use 0 days, and maybe that's a whole different kind of threat that we're up against. But to present it with no other evidence apart from a guy in a balaclava claiming to be Reval, I think.
Yeah,
interesting.
I've not seen any evidence that Reval are active. I've not seen any evidence. Call me out if I'm wrong on that, but it seems that they're still defunct.
There's been nothing presented, since they were taken down.
Good stuff. Any thoughts from you on KillNet, Rick, in general?
Well, this one is that Microsoft acknowledged that their Office 365 outage from last week, or was it the week before, was associated here. The other thing I would say is from the Q1 KillNet attacks, I think everyone needs to be careful not to, if you're listening, to think, oh, it's just kind of DDoS. It's just kind of like annoying gnats. We actually raised our threat assessment from low to medium, maybe low to moderate. I forgot how we did it in the system for them based on their activity. And we saw customers significantly impacted by DDoS attacks through technical debt, legacy infrastructure, in ways that took down, you know, healthcare systems and things along those lines. So I would just be careful not to just assume it's a hacktivist. They, you know, if we go back to tie it back to Klopp, and we're talking about intentions, motivations, and capabilities, KillNet has demonstrated the capability to leverage DDoS in a successful way. Not to take down the U.S. financial system or the Western financial system, but to have limited implications, that is certainly in their wheelhouse. And if you happen to be the victim of one of their DDoS attacks, if you're a financial institution, that could be quite significant for you. So don't underestimate this threat group. You know, we talked about tabletop exercises with Klopp. Be a good time in general. If you look at how are you going to respond to DDoS, how would you spin up a scrubbing surface? Sorry, I've been jet lagged.
Yeah, you're okay.
Words are hard. Yeah, you want to spin up a scrubbing service. I mean, that is a little bit.
Spin up a scrubbing service.
You know, you don't want to have to call Akamai in the midst of an attack. You want to have a plan. You want to know how much your on-prem solutions from a bandwidth perspective can protect. You know, there's going to be a certain level, and then you're going to need more. You may need DNS or BGP for the rerouting and mitigation of the attack. So again, just like with Klopp, just like with any other thing in your threat model, have a tabletop, know your playbooks, and then execute your playbook.
Good stuff. Yeah, we spoke briefly about the Cyber Anarchy Squad last week's podcast, Danny, and what they were doing. I think they managed to take down the my memory's gone as well now, Rick. Was it Infotel, the Russian telecommunications provider, for a matter of I think it was 36 hours, which is just very significant. Not saying that was definitely DDoS, but you know, it can have a significant, you know, outage for that length of time potentially. And you know, the cost can be, you know, particularly significant. I remember, you know, my first job in this industry was working for a telecommunications provider in the UK, and a few hours outage was big deal. Massive deal. Like, millions and millions of dollars of damages. Like, so it's not, it's just a few hours here and there. No, it's, you know, game-changing costs. So, yeah, it's not just, DDoS, whatever, you know.
It does make me wonder, I mean, I know we're a little bit out for it, but for our listeners that work in retail and e-tail, now is the time to start thinking about your holiday, Black Friday, you know, your e-commerce plan. Because maybe there's an increased likelihood that Killnet goes after retail come, you know, November, December timeframe. So it would be good as you're planning, and certainly in the midst of planning for that, just account for that. What are we going to do if hacktivists come over and try to disrupt, you know, Amazon, you know, whoever it is, or even if you're maybe perhaps a smaller one as well? Because we have seen Killnet target large and small organizations as well. So yeah, if you're in the e-commerce space, I would definitely think about how would you respond if Killnet decides to start targeting Western interests November, December timeframe.
Because they definitely did that. If they see like a particular sector, that's going to be widely used, like at the start of summer. Lots of airports were targeted in Europe, kind of like the start of summer holidays and people going away. So yeah, they definitely look to see what's a good thing, what can have a big impact based on what people are using, based on the time of year.
They actually, I was in Chicago O'Hare, I think it was that one. I travel so much, it's tough to remember where I was at, as you both know. But I was at one of the airports that Killnet did disrupt the airport page. The only implication for me is I was trying to see which gate TSA Pre was at, which is the more accelerated security screening process, and that was offline. So it did. That was actually less impact when they targeted the aviation than what we saw when they targeted healthcare in Q1.
I think if you work in this industry as well, you start assuming the worst about everything, don't you? I was in a retail store buying some shoes the other day, and they had some, like, I don't know, system that was just unavailable. They couldn't check stocks. So I was like, I don't know what's happened there. You know, you guys don't, but I do. There's probably nothing to do with that. But anyway.
On that note, though, my wife is a very half full kind of person, and I'm a very half empty, and I see risks and I see exposure everywhere we go. And it's quite probably good that she balances me out a little bit, because I'm always looking for the weaknesses or assuming the worst scenario in a situation.
Yeah, I'm the same. I wonder why that, after people in this industry in general, are they like that? Maybe I catastrophize over everything. Just they really need to stop doing that.
Maybe next time our cards declined, we can just, it's probably Killnet.
Not just a run out of money. Yeah. I've got to pay my bills. All right, let's move on to the last section, and we're going to give Danny a real spotlight to just basically give our listeners with an overview of what the team have observed in recent weeks during their deployments.
Yeah, so a few things going on, but lots of ransomware groups are...
Sorry, what do you mean deployment? Some of our listeners may not know.
We have members of the team who go on cybercriminal forums, and it's kind of called deploying to a forum. They keep a record of what things they've looked at, what sites they've visited, all of that stuff for OPSEC concerns. But yeah, so deploying is visiting a cyber criminal location. Could be on the clear web, could be on the dark web. So recently we've seen quite a lot of ransomware groups advertising on forums fairly openly. So I won't go over too much old ground, because I've said it on the pod before and in a few blogs. But basically, a couple of years ago, cybercriminal forums banned the sale of ransomware on their platforms, worried about the risk of exposing themselves to law enforcement if they hosted that.
Was Dark Side Colonial Pipeline aftermath, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they've kind of trickled back in. Some people, they kind of advertise instead. In previously, they would have, hey, join my ransomware as a service program. These are the specs I have, these are the terms you could get, this is the profits that you could get, whereas now they kind of just say, I'm looking for pen testers, who would kind of code word for ransomware affiliates. Mm-hmm. It's kind of really an open secret now, so there's a lot of new groups advertising. So No Escape, Quillin, I'm not sure exactly how we're pronouncing that, but Cyclops Monster, but then also big players like Alpha or Alpha V and Lockbit, they have advertisements on the two big Russian language forums. Again, they still can't use the word ransomware, otherwise they'll get banned, but they can kind of dance around it with other code words. And then there's another Russian language forum called RAMP, which is dedicated to ransomware, and they you know, no holds barred there. So it's just kind of like slowly come back to now. It's particularly with a lot, there's a lot of new groups. I mean, I think certainly over the past year, it seems that there's a new group popping up, or even two groups, three groups popping up every week.
Really?
Yeah.
They're quick.
I have often used the, we track approximately 100, but about 50 are operating at any time. Do you think that's still a good number? Or do you think it's larger than 50 that are operating at a time?
I think in terms of the ransomware as a service and the double extortion where they're posting victims on DLSs, I think there's
DLS being
data leak site, sorry, where they post. We've you know, hit this victim. If they don't pay, we'll leak more of their data, or here's the data because they didn't pay. But I'm sure there's far more groups that are smaller and not naming, that they don't even have a public facing website. They probably target like personal computers rather than enterprise. I think there's probably hundreds, maybe even like 1,000 groups. I wouldn't want to put a number on it, but a lot more probably lying beneath the surface that just isn't public facing. But yeah, every time, and I'm sure a lot of the new groups that come in are just people who have been involved in an older group,
rebadged.
Yeah. Or they've learned, you know, they've been an affiliate for a while and they're thinking, oh, I could kind of do this for myself and keep all the profit. Or conversely, I can just sit back, let someone else use my ransomware, lease it out, let them do the heavy lifting, and I'll just collect a bit of a percentage of the profits. I think that's how the cycle works, really.
Good stuff. You, we were talking earlier about Exposed Forum. Could you give us a little information on that service and what's happened recently?
Yeah, so in contrast to the Russian language forum scene, which is really united, both like in the past couple of months and also going back years, in contrast, the English language scene is really infighting at the moment. So Reach Forums, the main English language hacking forum and successor to the well-known Raid forums, went down after the arrest of its administrator by the FBI a good few months ago. A new forum, there's been quite a lot of newer forums set up in the wake of that to try and like take the mantle over. So Exposed was one of them. And despite suspicions of law enforcement involvement, it was picking up steam. It then, the Shiny Hunters hacking group, who I'm sure a few listeners will be aware of them, then brought back Breach Forums, brought it back online, and then hacked and defaced Exposed Forum.
Oh, I'm a little out of the loop. I didn't know Shiny Hunters was back in the mix.
Yeah, so they bought, well, I don't know whether they bought it or just took it over, but they took over Breach Forums and immediately started going after Exposed, I think wanting Breach Forums to kind of live on.
Shiny Hunters has been around a while. We had some run-ins within our customer base on them. Also very much a kind of a Robin Hood type of threat actor in the forums, with giving away things for free, lots of fanboys, fangirls of them, however you want to say it, idolizing their work.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of come back to bite them a bit with maybe some loose applications of OPSEC, because Exposed, so in response to Breach Forums taking them down, Exposed leaked a database containing the personal information of approximately 4,700 Breach Forum members. And they're kind of going a bit wild over that at the moment. So these forums that are all infighting, they're mainly focused on data leaks and just leaked databases, rather than initial access and the trade of vulnerabilities and exploits and things like that. So much so that the Russian language forum used, like the Russian language scene, these forums, they just share links directly to the English language forum, saying, hey, if you want this database, you can just get it on this other forum. There's no need for us to kind of bring it on here. And certainly whenever an English language forum goes down, which happens very often in contrast to the Russian language scene, people's immediate response is, oh, where am I going to get my leaks databases from? Does anyone know of a good place to get leaks? That seems like the main reason they use them. So a lot of forum users at the moment are worried that they've been doxxed off the back of this Breach Forum doxing or leakage. Yeah,
good stuff. I was once told the Russian language kind of cybercriminal scene was very like regimented, very organized, and the English language scene was just an absolute wild west of chaos. Is that accurate way of describing it?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's why the Russian language scene has been so successful, and I think the main, particularly from the administrators, they want their users to behave like businessmen and women rather than skids or, you know, things like that. So that's definitely the way it is. And it's interesting. So the English language scene doesn't really have a clear leader at the moment. Now that exposed raid forms, breach forms are gone. Interestingly, that the main leader is a leak base, which is English language, but it's kind of all translated from Russian. The administrator is a Russian. They used to be the administrator of another Russian language forum that went down. So kind of the English language scene is always being run by Russia at the moment.
I bet there's some absolutely amazing translations in there that don't quite work, right?
there's quite a lot of funny things.
It's interesting you were saying about, you know, ransomware just coming back on forums in a way. Do you think that's down to changing attitudes? Obviously, when the original kind of ban was imposed, it was because, like Rick said, you know, kind of colonial pipeline. Does Russia care if, like, its affiliates go and do spectacular attacks against critical national infrastructure anymore? Surely that's in their interest to do that now.
Yeah, I don't think the Russian language forums were ever worried about Western law enforcement compromising them. But when there was that whole kind of thing where the FBI were working with the FSB to take down Reval,
yep.
And I think there was a lot of panic off the back of that. But now I think, I don't want to say, you never want to say never, but it seems very, very unlikely that the Russian law enforcement would go after Russian cyber criminals targeting the West. So I think the fact that they're not allowing the word ransomware when you advertise ransomware, I think is more of just kind of a legacy thing that they can't really be bothered to change. And maybe it also keeps some level of plausible deniability. Like, it doesn't actually affect the trade, so if it's not broken, why fix it? But yeah, I to answer your question, yeah, I think they're not so worried anymore.
I suppose the bigger worry is being drafted, right, at this point.
Yeah, which we do actually see users saying that. Like, I wasn't able to I've been away for 6 months because I was in Ukraine, or I was drafted, or I've had to leave the country and it's been difficult to sort out my infrastructure after leaving. So it's definitely had an effect.
Oh, interesting.
That's a really useful time for me to segue into my last question. Just if, is there anything of interest being posted by users in general with regards to kind of the conflict?
Yeah, so particularly in terms of initial access, we're just seeing a rise. I couldn't really quantify it, just a rise in government agencies or military agencies, or in access to them being sold and requested on cyber criminal forums. So, and this is on both sides, even on the Russian language scene, which is a bit strange. So yesterday, a very credible initial access broker advertised, or who has several verified trades as well, they're definitely legit. They advertised initial access to Rostelecom, which is Russia's state telecoms agency, which is very, I don't really understand why they did that, because one of the first rules of the Russian language scene is you can't work, they call it working on, you can't work on Russia. So don't target Russia. If you don't target Russia, you'll be okay. But they were banned, I want to say a few hours later, but certainly very quickly. On the other side, we've seen there's a few users who've been repeatedly requesting access to Polish military agencies. There's been no public kind of obvious trade of that, but certainly interest after it. Mm-hmm. I think a few other Eastern European countries, or countries bordering Ukraine, I think the listener can make of that what they will, but obviously with the delivery of arms to Ukraine going through countries like Poland, I think it's interesting to see that reflected on forums. And then also one thing that I was a bit shocked to see was there's access to a US military satellite advertised on a forum, which got loads and loads of interest. The vendor said you will be able to see military and strategical positions if you gain access to this. I think it was going for about $15,000. There's been so far no proof that user has the access, but typically they don't provide proof publicly, so that's, we shouldn't take that as, oh well, they didn't provide proof, therefore they don't have it. But yeah, just an uptick in less, more things moving away from financial institutions and targets that would obviously be good for a financially motivated attack. Moving, I think they must know that there's some Russian state agencies on these forums, because that's certainly, I mean, who might buy something like a US military satellite access to that? So yeah, it's been interesting. Our analysts have seen some interesting things over the past couple of weeks, past month.
Definitely. That last one in particular. highly concerning. It's $15,000. Like, is that cheap in the grand scheme of things for something as in depth as that?
I think because, I mean, I don't know what if the Russian state was a buyer or the GRU was a buyer. I don't know what their budget would be, but they're probably marketing it to security agencies who maybe don't have as much money as a ransomware group. So, for example, one of our analysts saw the other day access to a Bangladeshi bank, and I think they only had Windows Defender on there, and I think they were selling it for $25,000. And one of their responses was, wow, this is cheap. You know, you found a bank that has just Windows Defender, you've got VPN, RDP. Why are you selling this? You could make way more money working on it yourself.
Probably are doing it.
They may well be doing both, but I think, yeah, for those not aware, that the motivation to just sell and access on once you've gained it is just, it's easier. You don't have to, there's less of a link tying you to any money drained from the victim.
Sell the access and then just off someone else can get in trouble for.
Yeah, exactly.
Outcome. Cool. All right. Well, we'll end there. Just quickly, if there's any other business from either of you. Anything at all?
Nothing my own, mate.
Okay, cool. All right, I will finish this week's podcast just by mentioning the blog we have going out on Thursday, the 22nd of June. This is titled Goot to Load, How a Goot Loader Infection Led to Credential Access, and this explores ReliaQuest's response to an incident involving credential access and exfiltration that was traced to a JavaScript-based initial access malware called Goot Loader. Using endpoint and network telemetry, we're able to advise on containment of the threat prior to impact, which was obviously highly useful. Definitely go check that one out. Other than that, that's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to Rick and for Danny for joining me today. Really useful, highly interesting conversation.
Good to be in person.
Yeah, I know. It's so much easier, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice.
I really prefer doing these in person. But that's it. Thanks for listening and stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Cheers, everyone. See ya.